All right, well, good morning. You guys go ahead and be seated. My name is Josh, and I'm an elder here at Friendship Church. It is my incredible privilege and honor to speak with you today. On your way in this morning, you got one of these, which is a worship guide, and at the bottom of it is our connection card. We'd ask if you would just go ahead and fill that out and drop it in the offering plate as it comes by. If you are a first-time guest with us today, this is all that we ask of you. And we don't knock on your door or come to you, but we do send you a nice little gift card to a local coffee shop. So please make sure you do that today. Also on your worship guide are the announcements on the front, upcoming events, and on the back you can follow along in terms of the notes and things we'll go over today. Speaking of things we'll go over today, we are starting a new series called Adulting. Adulting is the act of being an adult. Who here would agree that being an adult is hard? Yeah, see, no matter your age, no matter your wage, no matter your situation, being an adult is hard. I often remember about how busy I thought I was before I had kids. Yeah, I wasn't busy at all. And then I remember back to college when I thought I was busy before I had a job, and I realized that taking naps in the middle of the day and playing video games at night really wasn't being busy. It also wasn't being an adult. Who here thinks that society encourages us to be an adult today? Yeah, see, that's a different question, right? Almost no hands came up during that time. That's because in society, we're actually encouraged, in my opinion, to be children. And that's what this whole series is going to be about. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to touch on several different topics in terms of the things that we struggle with when it comes to acting like an adult or adulting. Today, we're going to talk about sustainable friendships. Now, if you look in the Bible, you'll see that God calls us to have several different types of relationships, right? And he covers this in many different facets, but he covers it in Deuteronomy, Ephesians, Timothy, and Matthew. So we are relational beings, and relationships are important. But in terms of those relationships, he covers five key areas, right? The first area is your relationship with God. The second area is your relationship with your spouse. The third area is your relationship with the rest of your family. And then that last area is a relationship with your friends. Now, I said five, and I only mentioned four, and that's because I skipped over one, which is the relationship with yourself, right? So that's also knowing who you are and who God created you to be comes after knowing who God is and before you dedicate your life to your spouse. But today we're going to focus on that very last one, which is the friendships piece. God not only gives us each one of those items, but he tells us to prioritize time for each. And so friends is that area where we do have to spend some time. Now, I think many of you would attest that spending time with friends is something that's easy to do, right? But at the same time, we have several different types of friends. We have acquaintances, we have coworkers. We have people that we meet now and again to maybe get some coffee. And then we get close friends or best friends after that. Well, see, today we're going to talk about that last piece, which is those sustainable friendships. But as I said before, everything comes in an order. And if you look at your worship guide, it'll show that Matthew 10:37, and it says that anyone who loves their father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Okay, so again, this is speaking to the priorities of relationships, right? If you love your mother or your father more than you love God, then your order of relationships is out of whack. Then it says, anyone who loves their son or daughter, their children more than me, is also out of order, right? So it's just trying to speak to that need to have an order and a prioritization of relationships. And it starts with God. And then it feeds into all the way down into friendships. As I said, today we're going to talk about sustainable friendships. So sustainable means to be maintained at a certain level. Okay, it's to sustain, right? Life sustains on earth. It continues to happen at a specific level. Someone argue that's better or worse today than it was 50 years ago, but it continues to sustain on earth. Friendship is the state of having a strong mutual liking and trust between two people. So you like each other, and you have trust between each other. You're willing to confide in one another. If you look closely at Jesus, you'll see he also had these different levels of relationship. He had thousands of followers. Dave talked a couple weeks about how 5,000 men came to hear him speak and that there were many women and children on top of that. So he had thousands of followers. He had up to 1.70 disciples. These are people that basically traveled with him, congregated with him, learned more about him, and kind of interacted at a deeper level. And then below that, there were 12 apostles, people that he intentionally spent time with, that he gave to, and they gave back to him. And then even within those 12 apostles, there were the three true friends, the three sustainable relationships throughout the Bible when it comes to Jesus. So today, as I said, we're talking about the sustainable ones. I came across a recent survey where they sent out into basically a survey out to about 200 adults, and this was to the United States, and it was in several different demographics. But 30 years ago, they sent it out, and then today they sent it out again. And it was mainly focused around asking questions about relationships, specifically about close friendships. And what they found is that 30 years ago, the average number of close friends, people that they confided within and that they trusted, was 3. Today, that average fell from 3 to 2. Isn't it amazing that we have Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, you name it, all these different ways to connect, but yet the total number of close friends dropped from 3 to 2. What I think is even more astonishing is that if you look at the total number of people that they said had no close friends, 30 years ago, the answer was less than 2%. Today, the answer was greater than 25%. It was actually closer to 30. So over one-third of the people, so one out of three people that you see sitting in this room today, has nobody that they confide in, that they trust, that they can stand back-to-back with, and build a relationship on. Personally, I just think that that's astonishing. And if you look at it, you start to ask maybe why. Why has that happened? How has that happened? Well, I think that we've gotten to a point, at least I know maybe I have, you've gotten to a point where instead of actually connecting with friends, you're starting to love the idea of having friends. How many followers do I have? How many likes do I have? How many different people are commenting on what I do or don't have? What are people doing that I'm not doing, right? It's that almost like we've created an idol about friendship. And so as it said before, God clearly says that we are to love him before we are to love anything else. And so the love of friends is not truly the connection of friends. In Proverbs 18:24, it gives us somewhat of a warning. First it says, a man of many companions may come to ruin. In other words, if you know lots of people and you converse with a lot of people, similar to God conversing with thousands of followers, right? But if you rely on those people that you're just companions with, then you may come to ruin. It goes on, however, one of those big buts in the Bible, anytime it says but, you pay attention. But there is a friend who sticks closer than a brother. These are the people that have your back. These are the people that no matter the situation, no matter if you're in need or you're not, they're there for you. These are the people that will stand in the trenches for you, and these are the key relationships to allowing you to survive. I think C.S. Lewis puts it best when he says in his quote, friendship is unnecessary, like philosophy and like art. It has no survival value. In other words, we don't actually need friendships to survive. I mean, I think that should be an example. We've dropped in total number of friendships, but we've continued to sustain. Rather, it is one of those things that give value to our survival. You can get by without friends, but you can't really live without them. Okay, and that kind of leads us to the big idea of today, which is that true friendships multiply the good in life. True friendships multiply the good in life. True friends are like the peanut butter in a chocolate sundae. They're like the smell of fresh-cut grass or fresh-cut sawdust. They are the mayonnaise in a mayonnaise cup. They are the sound that a V8 makes when it's humming, right? They just enhance the experience of everything that God has to offer. So that's kind of what we're focusing on today, is those close relationships. As Jesus noted, he has 3 close relationships, right? There are now many people who have none. So the goal today is we're going to walk through 3 keys to achieving a sustainable friendship. And the first key is that a sustainable friendship moves in the same direction. Moves in the same direction. Let me give you an example. So when I was younger and Melissa and I were dating, I would often come and I would have a plan because I'm a little bit of a nerd. So I would come and I'd be like, all right, here's a few things we're going to do. We're going to do whatever we want because we're free spirits, but here's a plan. She would often say, your plan is not very good. And she would give me something else, right? And so we would go off on an adventure. So if you haven't met Melissa, you will start to realize, so Melissa is now my wife, you will start to realize that she has this amazing memory, okay? It got to a point where I didn't actually have to look at GPS or look things up or do anything because she knew exactly where we were going to go and how we were going to get there. And we could pick random places, and she knew the streets and the names and where to turn and all these different things. Many people had a TomTom. I had a Mel-Mel. Okay, she could literally give me the directions of anywhere. But the problem with my Mel-Mel was that the timeliness and the appropriateness of the directions not always coincided with the direction we were going. For instance, if you're only about 100 feet away from a turn and you're traveling at 50 miles an hour and you're in the left lane and she yells, turn right here, but she's pointing left, shortly followed by that is a U-turn, and then you come back. In the same way, our friendships need to be moving in the same direction, right? The communication, the upfront agreement on where you're going and how you're getting there, right, needs to be understood. In Amos 3:3, it says, can two people walk together without agreeing on a direction? You see, while we had agreed on a location, we had not officially agreed on the direction that we were going to take. I was blindlessly following the directions that she had given me. In the same way, we need to understand and agree on the direction in which our friends are going and our friendships are going. This often means that we need to discuss the different reasons as to why we're going there, our values, our beliefs, our aspirations. If you want to be all that God has called you to be, then how are you supposed to get there if you have a friend who doesn't know God? Right? They're the ones standing back to back with you. They're the ones pointing you in the right direction. They're the ones fighting with you in the trenches. Now, I'm not saying that you can't have a friend who doesn't know God. What I'm saying is you can't have a sustainable relationship, a close personal relationship that you're building off of if your best friend doesn't know God. And it clearly illustrates that in Proverbs 13:20. He that walks with wise grows wise. Anytime it says wise in the Bible, God is wisdom, right? So that means he that knows God, right, is wise. And then it continues. But a companion of fools will suffer harm. So if you want to make the same mistakes that I did in my friendships before I knew God, so I basically spent 25 plus years of my life not knowing who God was, not knowing who I was called to be, not knowing what direction I wanted to be, then you'll make the same mistakes I did. You'll be arrogant, you'll be pushy, you'll be that silly little millennial that decides that they're no better than everyone else. I'm at the last of the millennial generation, so I can still say that, or the beginning, however you want to say that. So I made all those stupid things, and I made all those mistakes, and I suffered harm. There are serious scars from my past that I continually have to work at and overcome. But as I've grown forward, as we've all moved forward, if we're able to establish relationships with those that know God, we can continue to move in the right direction as God has called us. Now, what I want to do is I want to take just a moment, and so this isn't on your notes because it would not have all fit on your notes. So Jesus, when he first starts out and he goes to find apostles, he goes to find disciples and moves out. It starts in Matthew 4, and Jesus is walking by the sea, and he calls to Peter and Andrew, and shortly later he calls to James and John. He says, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men. What's interesting is they dropped everything, their nets, their boats, their family. Basically, John and James left their father sitting there stranded, as far as I know, literally left everything and went in the same direction as God. Okay, so starting in the same direction may be easy, but it's when you come to those turmoils that gets hard. So after this, they see all these different miracles happen. They grow together. They bond together. They continue to learn about each other. They understand what makes each other tick. They understand what their values and beliefs are, and they start to believe in God. They come to a point where Jesus shares a secret with his group of disciples, which at this point is close to 70. He says in John 6:35, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never be hungry again. Whoever believes in me will never be thirsty." Many of his disciples at that time said, "This is very hard to stand or understand. How can anyone accept it?" They looked at it and said, "This is going to be difficult. People are not going to agree with this. I'm not exactly sure if I want to go with a guy that says he's God. He could get persecuted. He could go to jail," right? There's all these negative things that could happen. And so many of them turned and walked away. But there was one, Peter, who was one of his closest friends, stood up and said, "We believe and we know you are the Holy One of God." They basically said, "We believe in you. We're with you. We've got your back. We're here for you and we're willing to support you." And it was at that moment they went from 70 to 12. They went from 70 to 12. I often look at that point and I think, you had 58 people who saw God do miracles, who up close in person saw all these different things that he did, that Jesus did as he walked and he preached and he teached, and they walked away. They said, "This is too hard. Society's not going to agree with this. My Instagram's going to get blown up. Nobody's going to like me on Facebook anymore. They're going to block me." Okay, they didn't have that back in, but that's what it would look like today, right? All these different things are going to happen, so I'm just not doing it. I'm walking away. But Peter and the rest of the apostles stayed. And we all do the same. We have a friend that challenges us, that pushes us to do something that will fulfill who God has called us to be based on our beliefs and our values and what we've agreed on. But we'll say that it's too hard. We'll say that I don't have time. We'll say that it's not worth doing, that somebody will make fun of me. But see, sustainable friendships move in the same direction. And so this also leads me to my next point. Sustainable friendships require giving and receiving. Giving and receiving. So I have three little girls at home. So the receiving part is very easy for them. Receive, 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 take, take, take. I want that, I want this, give, give, give. I want everything now. We're a lot like those small little girls. Give, you know, take, 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 but not necessarily giving. There's also people that are the inverse of that. They want to give, 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 but they're not looking for an opportunity to receive or take anything. And so that leads us into some trouble. In 1 Peter 4:9 through 10, it says, "Show hospitality to one another without grumbling," without complaining, without whining. I have that conversation with the girls all the time. "As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's very grace." Each of us have been given a gift, a special, unique gift. And God puts specific people in our lives so that we can build those friendships. But we need to be good stewards and use those gifts to give back to them. It goes on in Job 6:14 to say, "He who withholds kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty." You could say, "He who withholds kindness from a friend does not believe in God." All right, that's how far it goes. I think you could also remove the withholds and replace it with rejects, and it would say, "He who rejects kindness from a friend forsakes the fear of the Almighty." And so Jesus clearly lays this out for his apostles in James 13:17. So at this point in time, God brings all the apostles into the room, and he sits them all down, and he says, "I'm going to wash your feet." Which to us is like, yeah, so what? You're going to wash the feet. Well, back then, they didn't have shoes, they had sandals. They didn't have pavement, they had dirt roads. They didn't have cars, they walked everywhere they went, and more than likely it was some sort of leather saddle type fabric. So if you've ever had like a leather shoe that you've walked on consistently, it gets slick after time, it builds that smell after time, it gets dirty after time, right? It's really gross and really disgusting. So for Jesus to say, "I'm going to wash your feet," right? Your disgusting, ugly, yucky feet. That's pretty severe. At the same time, the only people who ever did that were servants, because that was the That's how low that job was. And so when this happens, right, he says, I'm going to wash your feet and I'm going to serve you and show you how you serve others, right? Because those that are willing to serve are the true leaders of this world. And he starts, and one of his best friends, one of his sustainable friendships, Peter says, no, there's no way that I'm allowing this to happen. You, the King of Kings, you, the Lord of Lords, are not washing my feet. I am a servant to you. You are not a servant to me. And Jesus looks at him and he says, I must do this for you to belong to me. I must do this for you to belong to me. In other words, for us to be true friends, you have to be willing to receive, and I have to have the opportunity to give. And this is it. And Peter responds in the fashion that I hope that we all would, which is, okay then, wash me from head to toe, right? Not just my feet, but everything, because I want to belong to you. I want to give and receive. I want to partake in the friendship that we have. Jesus says this, this is what we are to do for each other, no matter if we're the slave or the master, we are equal, or we are, no matter if we are equal or not, we are to support one another. So again, what does this look like in his inner circle with his friends? So how does he give and he receive? So again, this is not on your notes because there was too much to cover, but first, there is the raising of Jairus' daughter from the dead in Mark 35:40. In this instance, all the apostles come. He says, you will stay outside. Technically, at this point in time, it's all the disciples, but he says, you will stay outside, and he grabs his three closest, James, John, and Peter, and he says, you will come in with me. He then raises the girl from the dead, and so in this moment, they got to see the power of Christ. They got to see who he was, and I think what he really was displaying to them is the gift of giving, right? Because after this happens, they all stay together with the family. They all partake in food, and they get to see this glorious reward of what it looks like to give to one another. Then it moves on to the transfiguration of Christ on the mount in Matthew 17. At this point in time, he says again, everyone else stay down here. James, John, Peter, you will come with me up to the top of the mountain. They get to the top of the mountain, and Jesus literally starts to glow. His face glows. He gets real bright, white, all of these kinds of things. Elijah and Moses show up. They start having a conversation with Jesus, right? Peter gets all excited and says, I'm going to build all of these temples and worship areas. And God says, that's not the point. That's not what I'm here for. That's not what this is all about. He says, this is about me showing you who I really am. And it was at that point in time that he revealed himself to his closest friends. He was open. He was honest. He shared the secret, right? And at the end of both the first and the second, he asked them not to share what had been done. So he confided in them and he trusted them. Next, there was the prayer at the Garden of Gethsemane, where again, he pulled just the three, John, James, and Peter aside, and he started sharing with them. He was open and honest about his feelings. He was anguished, distressed, and crushed soul with grief. He was about to be captured so that he could serve what God had put him on earth to do, which was to sacrifice his life so that we could be free of the sins that we have, right? And so he pleads with them. He is open. He is honest. He asks them to watch and protect and pray over him. So he gave them an opportunity to give back to him. He was willingly laying himself, begging, pleading. As a matter of fact, his three best friends fell asleep while they were praying. And he came back to them and he says, please, please watch over me and pray for me, because if this is what I am to do, if I am truly to fulfill what God wants me to do, then have it be done today. But if not, give me a clear sign. And so they stay with him and they pray with him. And so each one of these, God gives us what it truly means to be a friend. He does not give to everyone. He pulls aside his three closest friends and he has the conversation. So when he's giving, when he's truly giving, he's not giving to thousands. He's giving to close. So in the same way, when we're giving, maybe we shouldn't post our most intimate things out there for everyone to try to give back to. When he needs support, again, he does not go to everyone. He goes to his three closest friends. He trusts, confides, and counts on his friends, right? He almost holds them accountable to support him. And this is what a sustainable friendship looks like. It's not giving without also looking to receive, not receiving without also looking to give, not sharing our most intimate moments on Facebook, and not looking for support or guidance from our Twitter or our different feeds. It is about giving and receiving with our sustainable friendships. So first, we were to move in the same direction. Second, we were to give and receive. And then third, a sustainable friendship takes time and effort. Time and effort. I want you to first know that this is an area that I struggle in. I don't prioritize my time very well. I kind of see it as it comes. I plan a lot of other things, but I don't plan my time. This is also an area that I don't really put enough effort into, actually reaching out and putting effort into building in friendship. That's okay. God gives us friends and puts people in certain lives so that we can build that up. And also, it took Jesus nearly 3.5 years before he truly revealed himself to the inner circle. So from the time that he said, "Follow me, I will make you fishers of men," to the time in which he showed his transfiguration was about 3.5 years. So it takes time. In 1 Peter 5, 6-7, it says, "Humble yourselves, therefore, under God's mighty hand, that he may lift you up in due time and cast out all of your anxiety on him because he cares for you." The point in this is that God has a very specific plan for you, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. That includes those sustainable friendships that he will put in your life. So you have to be aware, you have to be patient, and you have to be willing to take your anxiety about not having those and giving those to God. In Proverbs 27:17, it says that iron sharpens iron and one man sharpens another. This is a great description of friendship. If you ever watched Iron Be Sharpened, I talked about this the last time, there's a lot of heat, there's a lot of conflict, there's a lot of loss of material, right? As one man sharpens another, it is not a simple process. In the same way, if you look at the life of the apostles, right, they started out as fishermen, and in almost every preaching, God was like, "You don't know what you're talking about, this is what I'm saying. No, 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 this is what I mean. No, don't do that, do this," right? In all those different ways, they had to continue to sharpen each other. And at the end, he asked them to sharpen him. So we are to sharpen each other. And so how do we do that? In Colossians 3:12 through 14, it says, "Therefore, as God's chosen people, holy and dearly loved, clothe yourself with compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience." I want you to know I'm good with all those until you get to patience. You're to be compassionate towards others. I have some empathy. I can be compassionate. I can talk. You can be kind to others. We can do that. I've learned to be humble. I can be gentle. I have 3 small girls. But to be patient is probably the strongest area that I personally struggle in. In the same way, we're to be patient with not only our friendships, but with our close personal friends. It goes on to say, "Bear with each other and forgive one another if any of you have a grievance against someone. Forgive as your Lord forgave you, and over all of these virtues put on love, which binds them all together in perfect unity." We are called to love. We are called to forgive. And the most difficult, we are called to be patient. So again, what does this look like inside of Jesus' inner circle? Well, I think the best way to cover this is after now Jesus has been captured, right? So after he's captured and, you know, they start to go through the process, basically the disciples somewhat disappear. They're not necessarily there for God. They're not there alongside Jesus Christ. They're not trying to see or support him. As a matter of fact, many of them are fearing from their lives. James is really not to be heard of for quite some time. Peter denies Jesus 3 times and still doesn't come. But John, the beloved John, is the only one out of all 12 of the 3 closest that stays and continues to be with God. He goes over this in John 19:25, where he is present as Jesus is being crucified. So I want you to think for a moment. If your friend, your best friend, has been sentenced to death, right? And not just like, we're going to say goodbye, we'll never see them again, but no, they're going to carry a cross, they're going to get stabbed, they're going to bleed, they're going to get nailed, they're going to have all of these painful things done, and there's absolutely nothing that you can do about it. And then at the same time, if you're caught, they're going to do the same thing to you, right? I mean, this is a very serious, very dramatic, very painful situation to be as a friend, but John never leaves God. He's always with Jesus, right? And as a matter of fact, right before the famous words, "It is finished," Jesus looks out to the crowd and he sees his mother and he sees John. And he looks at John and he says, "My disciple, this is now your mother. Mother, this is now your son." And from there forward, John takes care of Jesus' mother. That's how close of a friendship they had. That's how John never gave up. In John 15:13, it says, "Greater love has no one than this, that someone would lay their life down for their friends. One that stands by you because they want to be there so bad that they almost need to be there. Not because it's convenient or cool or something they can benefit from, but one that will fight for you, wage war for you, and with you no matter the consequence." I think the best illustration of what this benefit looks like, and to kind of try to wrap all this up today, is in Ecclesiastes 4:12. In Ecclesiastes 4:12, it says, "A person standing alone can be attacked and defeated." So if you're one of those people who don't have a close friend, give your anxieties to God, but be aware that you will be attacked, and it will be difficult to move forward. If you can find that friend, it goes on to say, "But two can stand back to back and conquer." If you have a close friend, they can cover your blind side. They can cover your weaknesses. They can make you stronger than what you've ever imagined. And then it goes on to say that three are even better, for a triple braided cord is not easily broken. Did you know that a rope, an actually woven rope, is like 100 times stronger than the individual strand? Think about that for a moment. One person standing on their own is maybe strong 10, right? But basically a group, even just three woven together, is at least 10 times. So they're at least now 100, right? It multiplies what you have and what you're able to do. In the same way, as we said before, it multiplies the good that you will experience in life. If you look at things in our world, you'll see that they've also taken on the same principle. Seat belts, tie down straps, and even Kevlar use the same principle of woven strands, making it stronger. Could you imagine what the church would look like if we were a rope of woven ropes of woven strands? If there was these connectedness, these sustainable friendships throughout the body of the church that was building, making each other stronger, making each one of them being God, what God called them to be. And then together they were multiplying. And then together they were starting to build those connectedness further, right? And now you've got this strong friendship and this strong friendship that gets woven together. And then from there, those woven friendships get woven on top of other friendships. Could you imagine what the church could do? Could you imagine how we no longer need necessarily social media? We no longer need all these different things in our lives because we have the guidance and the counsel of friends, true friends, sustainable friends that love and care for us. We would be strong, we'd be connected, we'd be as effective and influential as you could ever imagine. So maybe you're thinking, all right, Josh, that sounds great. Having friends is cool. Friends can help me. But I don't even know what direction I'm headed in. I don't even know who God is, right? How am I supposed to have a friend who knows who God is if I don't even know who God is to begin with? Well, I'm going to ask you to pray, I'm going to ask you to read, and I'm going to ask you to take time to find you, right? When I first started, I had several close friendships. I was in a fraternity house. I had at least three guys who would stand back to back and fight battles with me. But I'll tell you, we were constantly fighting the wrong battles. And so instead of holding on to those relationships, I stepped away, and I found who God wanted me to be. I corrected my relationship with God. I found myself. I found my spouse. And then I started to connect with others. And as I started to build those new bonds, those old friends started to come back in. But at the beginning, it started with starting fresh, starting new in who God had called me to be. So maybe you're saying, I don't have anyone to connect with. I don't really have anyone or a way to find close friends. Well, I want you to know at Friendship, that's the reason why we have small groups. Our small groups are starting again in January. Many of them are wrapping up now. But the small groups are literally in someone's house. It is talking about those different things that you struggle with, that connectedness that you need through conversation and through food, right? All those wonderful things that we love. So I'd encourage you the next time that comes up, you jump into a small group, and that you'd also be willing to step out on the water, as Peter did, and try to get your miracle, right? Understand where Jesus is there and that he can catch you. Three, you're saying, all right, cool, I know who God is, I'm connected, but I still have all these other friends, right? How do I make those current personal relationships, how do I convert them from personal relationships to positive, sustainable relationships? Well, I'm here to tell you that's why we do things like the tailgate party, Uncivilized, Rejuvenate. Those are really on-ramps for you to invite your friends, your non-believing, un-Christian friends to here so that they can start to figure out who God is and who God has called them to be. So if you're looking for all these friends and how to get them connected, if you're a guy, invite them to Uncivilized. I said this to Hunter earlier. He doesn't sell it good enough. The food is amazing. We throw axes. People get hurt every year. It is crazy. It is competitive. And if you are a dude, it is the coolest dude thing you can do. Every year, I invite 10 people, and at least 40 people show up. Because once that word spreads and once one person experiences, it goes from there. And that's what we try to do. We try to keep things that are fun, relevant, and never a waste of your time. Create on-ramps for your friends to move from friends to sustainable friendships. And so, again, you got a worship guide when you came in. On the back of that, there's a challenge. And so this is my challenge for you today. And that's to take the next step towards having friendships that multiply the good in life. Whatever stage you're at, whether you don't know what direction you're heading, you don't have friends at this point, or you have friends but they're not truly knowing who God is and can't support you in a way that's a sustainable friendship, take whatever that next step is so that you can make a difference in not only your life, but in the life of the church and everything that he's called us to be. Would you pray with me? God, we thank you so much for this opportunity to come together and to learn more about you. We thank you for the love and the kindness that you continue to share with us and the clear description you give us when it comes to building sustainable friendships. We thank you for the picture of John. We thank you for your love and your sacrifice. God, we just hope that we can, through each day, glorify you more and more and that we can share our love with others, that we'd be willing to take time and effort to build those relationships, that we'd be willing to both give and take in those relationships, and that we'd be willing to also not only maintain them at a certain level, but move them in a certain direction that is closer to you and everything that you've called us to be. God, you're an amazing, wonderful God, and it's in your name we pray. Amen.